Welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring Mr. Movie and Mr. Film. This week, our hosts venture off to the cinema and return with their insightful reviews on Secretariat, Life as We Know It, and Waiting for Superman. And now, without further ado, here are Mr. Movie and Mr. Film.
I'm Mr. Movie.
And I'm Mr. Film.
And a quick announcement. Last week, Mr. Film and I went head-to-head to see who could pick the most obscure movie from our respective libraries. And the winner is, by two votes, it's me, Mr. Film. It's Mr. Movie. For Enjoy Your Bath, and Bubba Hotep, probably worth a watch, but didn't win the contest, so. All right.
There's always next time.
That's right. We're going to dive into our first review. This week, Disney brings us another PG-rated formulaic sports drama, this time with Diane Lane, John Malkovich, and the subject matter of this is horse racing, about the 1973 Triple Crown winner, Secretariat.
You're guaranteeing that this horse is going to win the Triple Crown. Three races, three states, in just 5 weeks. Hasn't been done in 25 years. You're that stubborn.
I'm that right.
She scares me.
Good.
In Secretariat, Diane Lane plays Penny Chenery, a housewife who inherits a horse racing ranch from her father. She decides to go into the horse racing business and raises one of the fastest horses in history. This is a typical, formulaic Disney sports movie, like the many we've seen before. The characters aren't particularly deep, and it's filled with feel-good scenes that mostly illustrate family values. All this feels rather cliché, and, well, it is. The exception here is John Malkovich, who plays Lucian, a flamboyant horse trainer with an attitude, and Malkovich brings some much-needed depth to this otherwise shallow picture. And when the horse starts to win, he's the only one we really have a connection with in celebrating Secretariat's victories. Diane Lane and the rest of the cast are fine, there's nothing particularly offensive about them, but they simply serve as plug-ins that manage to serve the story of developing a winning team. Based on a true story from the 1970s, it comes as no surprise that Secretariat is a winner, and the horse racing scenes here are well executed. As someone who knows little about horse racing and has little interest in it too, I can say that the racing scenes are pretty good. Even though most of us know the outcome of the races, they are thrilling nonetheless. At an hour and 45 minutes, the picture doesn't go on too long, which is nice, and the final triumph is particularly exciting. I don't want to give the ending away, but I will say that it is refreshing to see Secretariat win in the way he does in this movie. Director Randall Wallace has a good sense of space and time, which serves the races well, and you will be cheering and laughing and enjoying them for what they're worth, and leave the theater with a winning attitude. Though this movie is rather heavy-handed and a bit trite, it does manage to overcome that to a degree. I'm going to go with a solid B on this, Mr. Film.
All right, Mr. Movie, I think the technical term you're looking for to describe Secretariat is schmaltzy. This is pure 100% thoroughbred schmaltz through and through. But that really isn't a criticism. Really, what else can you expect from a story with a well-known ending and little in the way of conflict? And it works, as you said, on pretty much every level. I got choked up when I was supposed to. I was holding my breath when I was supposed to, even though I knew how everything was going to turn out. Got annoyed when I was supposed to, etc. As an exercise in cinematic manipulation, Secretariat has few rivals outside of Saving Private Ryan. Now, I do have to say that I think the film is too long, and the story structure left me a little cold. I could have done without all the lead up to the Triple Crown. And actually, I would have liked to have gotten a little bit more into the horse racing milieu. What's the strategy? How do you make money? Etc.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought all the Chenery, Tweety family stuff was a little on the boring side, particularly the rather lame subplot with the hippie daughter and her protest play, which was a little bit much, even for a film set in the 1970s. I do have one disagreement with you, Mr. Movie. I don't think any of the acting, particularly John Malkovich's, was all that good. Serviceable.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was serviceable, but it wasn't that great. The primary problem is that it felt and looked like acting. I didn't believe that any of these actors inhabited the skin of these characters. They were Diane Lane as Penny Chenery. They were John Malkovich as Lucian, etc.
Yeah, but John Malkovich, I mean, his character actually had some color. Everybody else was pretty,
I mean, I will give you that. I will give you that he did bring a little energy to it. But, you know, I could basically see him acting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So the, you know, and I have to say he'd probably even admit this is not his finest hour. So, you know, he might have been the best of the group, but he still wasn't that great. So, you know, the film might not be fleet of foot, but I have to say that I still enjoyed the ride. And like you, I give this Disney oat-fed horse flick a solid B.
I think that's fair. I mean, I gave it a B, and the racing scenes here are really the strongest point.
Yeah,
and
you know,
while you're watching the movie, you're a little bit bored with some of the family stuff going on and the hippie stuff that you mentioned. I agree with that, but the racing scenes make it worthwhile. And you know, it's not as enjoyable watching it, but walking away, you do have that uplifting spirit and thinking about it. So, you know, it's more enjoyable maybe the next day than anything else.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I did really like the racing scenes as well. So I actually just finished a Dick Francis mystery, and they're always on horse racing stories. So I do like the milieu. I like the whole horse racing world, but I wish there was more about how it all kind of worked and you made money and. Yeah, you know, they had a little bit with the stud fees and things of that sort, but I actually would have liked to have gotten a little bit more in the technical side of things.
Yeah, maybe more into the actual business of horse racing.
Yeah, she is
supposed to be a businesswoman here, and she's going from a housewife into being kind of an entrepreneur, and I like that idea, but I wanted more details. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think if the whole thing took place around the Triple Crown races as opposed to all this, you know, the horse is born and it's eating things and they're washing it or whatever. I think it would have been more interesting.
That's just typical Disney fashion though.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have the family scene and the thing is born and the daughter has a hippie play, you know, it's.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think if it was a different studio or different producers, etc., they would have had maybe a little bit different take on the whole the structure of the story, a more innovative way to present it. But the racing, if you like horse racing, if you like uplifting stories, I say go see it.
Definitely. All right. Well, for our next movie, we have from Warner Brothers Pictures an odd mix of family values, romantic comedy, and gross-out slapstick humor called Life as We Know It.
Did Allison and Peter speak with you about who would take care of Sophie in the unlikely event that they should both die?
No.
They named you.
She's making the poop face.
What do you mean she's making the poop face?
Oh, God, she's going to poop in the tub. Hurry up, hurry up. She's going to poop on me.
Or the side.
Okay.
No.
Oh, my God, that's my hat.
In Life as We Know It, Katherine Hagel plays Holly and Josh Duhamel plays Messer, two opposites who, when their best friends die in a car accident, leave their kid under their care, and life as they know it comes to an end. Hagel and Duhamel are thrown into the roles of parents, Hagel being the responsible one, and Duhamel being a carefree playboy whose main hobby is sleeping with women. Of course, they also hate each other, which makes raising a kid together a bit of a challenge. But when they realize no one can take care of the kid, and the thought of foster care is a non-starter for them both, they take on the task. What follows next in this near 1 hour 45-minute flick is entirely predictable, and the movie gives us scene after scene of feeding the baby, changing diapers, watching the kid take its first steps, mixed with the romantic shenanigans of Duhamel and Hagel. Those in the throes of new parenthood will likely find much to recognize in this movie, and it's really targeted at them. Poopy diapers and crying babies dominate most of the experience here, and what's missing is a real connection with the kid. There should have been more in this arena to demonstrate to us that it's all worth it in the end. But the two main characters go through a transformation that is at least believable, and formula and predictability are the movie's main yawning points. If you don't have kids or want kids, this will likely be a snore fest for you. And if you do have kids, there's enough unrealistic and unbelievable situations that make this picture, at best, a rental. But it's not all bad, and if you have a newborn and can escape for a date night, the picture delivers a few good laughs, though not enough for my taste. And again, as we've discussed before, Mr. Film, the use of shock value humor replaces genuine comedy for the most part. There are a few funny jokes, but they are mostly situational and do little to move the story forward. And the best I can give Life as We Know It is a C+. Mr. Film?
Boy, were you... I think you were like nodding off or something, because I've had it. I'm officially putting sanctions on Hollywood-produced romantic comedies until said time when Hollywood can actually pull off a funny one. This was probably one of the most excruciating cinema experiences in my life. The characters weren't charming, the situations weren't funny, and there are too many, like four too many, poop jokes. This is an important way Hollywood can lift the Mr. Film sanction against romantic comedies. No more poo jokes. Period. I'm telling you, poop in and of itself isn't funny. Smearing it on someone's face is even less so. And every other variation of smearing, smelling, indicating poop is not funny. Period. Now, I have to say, there is a funny movie, or at least an interesting one, that could have been made with this pooey material. But it misfires at every level, giving us instead a yawn-inducing formula pick that just tries too hard to deliver jokes. And I didn't laugh at one joke here. And this begins with the setup. Really, these two morons were the only people the successful lawyer and his beautiful wife could entrust their one and only daughter to. And why not tell them? Of course, we know why. Then we can't have the funny big reveal and all of the, wait for it, poop jokes. Okay, I do have another theory about this film. I think it actually is some sort of clandestine commercial for why parents should have licenses or something of that sort before they can have children. How this kid didn't die in the about 5 minutes after these two idiots started taking care of her, I don't know. And why social services didn't take her away from them, please. My cat could have taken better care of this kid. And seriously, there is a funny movie that could be here. We've had it before. We saw it 20 years ago. It's called Three Men and a Baby. It's a very charming picture.
Yeah.
About three guys who get a kid in this very unusual sort of way, and it works. It works on every level, and it's funny and charming, and you do connect with the kid, and you connect with the guys, and they're all the same kind of guys that and the same kind of characters that we have in this picture. But it's funny because they knew how to write at least an interesting sitcom of a flick there.
That's a good point. I think there are plenty of alternatives to this that touch on the
Absolutely.
Same things that are far worth the price of the rental versus this one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, seriously, and I am kind of being serious here, I think this really is the death knell of the romantic comedy. We've been talking about this for the last few weeks, about how bad most comedies are, and particularly the romantic comedy. And this really is the bottom of the barrel. I mean, particularly considering Katherine Hagel produced it. So she produced this picture. She went out, she found the script, she shepherded it through. If this is the best that she can come up with, you know, is the star of the picture, we're in bad shape here. So I think that, you know, Hollywood just should stop now with all romantic comedies, everything in production, everything in development, stop. Rewrite everything, retool everything to zombie flicks. And in this case, they wouldn't have had to even have changed the title. They could have just kept the same title, probably very similar situations, and it would have been more interesting. And however, since
wait a second, did you just propose that they put zombies in this movie?
I think they should put zombies in this movie. All romantic comedy zombie movies now, until we can have a funny one. Until we can have a funny romantic comedy, they all have to be retooled into zombie pictures. Because this, at least that would have been interesting. This was horrible, awful, every step of the way. New parents, old parents, non-parents, stay away. Just stay away from this picture.
Maybe the parents could have died and come back as zombies and taken better care of this kid than these guys did in this movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That would have been a picture. That would have been a good picture. So I'm giving this pile of poo a deserved F.
Ouch, that's harsh. But
yeah, well, I felt really harsh coming out of this movie.
I understand where you're coming from, and I can't say I disagree with it. So, you know, I think those who are in the throes of new parenthood, maybe there's a few jokes here, but like you said, there's a lot better alternatives. So
yeah. Yeah. And I know a few new. I know a few new parents. I know parents who've gone through this a few times. And believe me, it doesn't look like that by any stretch of the imagination. So, as a matter of fact, I would have rather watched a documentary of some of my friends with the first 6 months of their kid's life. I think it would have been funnier and more interesting. So,
all right. Well, that's enough of that movie. Mr. Film?
Our next film is Waiting for Superman. Now, it's not the newest iteration of the world's oldest Caped Crusader. This documentary is trying to solve one of America's most vexing problems, public education.
You wake up every morning and you know that kids are getting a really crappy education right now.
So you think that most of the kids here are getting a crappy education right now?
Oh, I don't think they are. I know they are.
Either the kids are getting stupider every year, or something is wrong in the education system.
I just try to do my best in school and make my grandmother proud.
Among 30 developed countries, we rank 25th in math and 21st in science. In almost every category, we've fallen behind, except one. Kids from the USA rank number one in confidence.
In Davis Guggenheim's PG-rated documentary from Paramount Pictures, he points the finger squarely at teachers' unions and an educational system that recognizes failure but doesn't do anything about it except throw the occasional dollar or platitude its way. Statistics, and they're compelling, are at the heart of Guggenheim's 102-minute exposé. Among them, for example, the state of Pennsylvania spends more to house and feed inmates for 4 years than a parent will spend on a 12-year private school education in the same state. A doctor or lawyer in Illinois are about 400 times more likely to lose their licenses than a tenured teacher is to get fired. And it goes on or downhill from there. Now, while Guggenheim spends time with crusading educators, among them Jeffrey Canada and Washington, D.C. Superintendent Michelle Rhee, who coincidentally resigned her post recently, it's some of the bright kids affected by a system that's fundamentally broken that's supposed to pull at our heartstrings. We see these kids in communities like the Bronx, the District of Columbia, and Los Angeles's Boyle Heights, hoping for a future that's pinned on a turn of fate. They all want to get to charter schools, public schools that are independent of school boards and tenured bureaucracy, and must participate in a mandated lottery to win a coveted spot. Some win, many lose, and it's heartbreaking all the way. Now, while I appreciate Guggenheim's film, you know, I went to public school and I know how bad even the good ones are, but I don't know what he wants me to do about it. The film really comes out of the old social problem school of documentary. But in those classic films, the filmmaker and sometimes the subjects themselves worked together to expose a problem and offer a real solution, and many times got results. Guggenheim shows us the problem, and I think we all know what that is, but offers few solutions. Sure, there are those oases of good schools and great teachers, but as he points out, the teachers' unions, and be forewarned, they do not come off very well here, are basically designed to keep their constituencies, that is, teachers, employed and not in educating the kids. So this is an important documentary. See it, discuss it, but don't expect to find any answers. I give this a B for effort.
I think that's good. I agree with you on everything here, I think. You know, the feel of this movie is similar in some thematic ways to Never Let Me Go, which we reviewed a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
But instead of fiction, this is a real-world dystopian situation that we've created for ourselves in our educational system. And it's horribly tragic in that a system that's supposed to promote life and knowledge actually ends up stunting it. The whole issue of dealing with the teachers' unions and whatnot, I thought it was very brave that they took that on, because this is a very challenging area and there is a lot of resistance because of, you know, unions and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's really illuminating and shocking. you know, you said that the picture doesn't really offer solutions. I think it's pretty clear from this movie that the problem is the unions, and that they need to get the unions out of the schools to the extent that they actually free up the market in education, in that the unions don't have a stranglehold on who can be hired and who can be fired. Yeah. That those charter schools where they don't have those restrictions, they excel. And that's just one small minor freeing up of the education market. I do wish that they had taken a look into private education and explored the costs of that versus public education. And there's one other thing that's completely bizarre about this movie, Mr. Film. They were giving out these coupons.
Oh, I got one of those too.
Yeah. How much was it for? Like $20 or $15, I think?
$15
to donate to a public school of your choice. And if you go on the website to do that, it's a donation to buy like classroom equipment for students, overhead projectors, you know, books, pencils, that kind of thing. And it's completely antithetical to the theme of this movie, which is that what needs to happen is not more money being going into it, but that we need to get rid of bad teachers, basically, is what it's saying. And yeah. and this whole donation thing has nothing to do with it. And in fact, it doesn't solve the problem at all. It's throwing money away in the garbage. So it's totally bizarre that the distributor or whoever is sponsoring this is putting this out as some sort of like, you can help the schools. But if you watch the movie, you know, you might as well just tear that thing up and throw it in the garbage, because that's not going to do anything.
No. And I think that, you know, there is a lot here that you look at, and there's just stunning things. I mean, and the thing also to think about too is that all the kids who are profiled here, all of the parents, no matter what their socioeconomic level is, and there is at least one kid here who's from a fairly well-to-do family.
Mm-hmm.
These are all very involved, caring parents, and these kids are teetering on the edge. Imagine, you know, what it must be like for the kids whose parents can't care or don't care.
Sure.
And even worse. So, I think anybody who cares about education, who cares about knowledge and the transmission of knowledge, should go see this picture. I just think that it just got a little too mired in statistics. I think it also got – I think there's some other radical ideas that – and not in terms of solutions, but some of the causes of these problems. There are some other more radical things that they could have discussed beyond teachers, particularly what the value of education is today and what its real function is. But I think that's a different film. But I think what's really interesting is that Guggenheim is obviously a leftist. He admits that. He sends his own kids to private schools, of course. And I think it would interesting if, as you mentioned, that if he had looked at private schools as one of the options, you know, getting rid of the whole public concept and coming back to a different public sort of approach than what we have today. So
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, that's really the tragedy here. And if I could bring it back to Never Let Me Go Again, you have these characters struggling to find some sense of the system and never really even questioning the morality of the whole thing as such. So there's definitely some interesting similarities there. But this is worth taking a look at. I give it a B, like you, Mr. Film. And that's it.
All right.
Well, that wraps the show for this week. In review, Mr. Film and I both gave Secretariat a B.
And for Life as We Know It, Mr. Movie gave it a C+. I gave it a deserved F.
Okay. And we both gave Waiting for Superman a B.
All right. Our next show, we'll be looking at Red. It's kind of a funny story. And we'll be going on the ghosty and ghouly side and looking at things that go bump in the night, cinematically, anyway.
All right. Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Make sure to subscribe to us in iTunes. Just go to moviefilmshow.com. and click on the iTunes link under the subscription section. And if you want to send us a comment, feedback, send us an email, write to us at mail@moviefilmshow.com and visit us online at www.moviefilmshow.com. And that's it for this week. Mr. Film, I'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week, Mr. Movie.
That's just typical Disney fashion, though.
Yeah.
We got to have the family scene. The thing is born. The daughter has a hippie play. You know, it's...
Yeah. I've had it. I'm officially putting sanctions on Hollywood-produced romantic comedies until said time when Hollywood can actually pull off a funny one. No more poo jokes. Poop, in and of itself, isn't funny. No more poo jokes. My cat could have taken better care of this kid.
And again, as we've discussed before, Mr. Film, the use of shock value humor replaces genuine comedy for the most part.
Wait for it. Poop jokes. No more poo jokes. However, since
wait a second. Wait, did you just propose that they put zombies in this movie?
I think they should put zombies in all romantic comedy zombie movies now, until we can have a funny one. Until we can have a funny romantic comedy, they all have to be retooled into zombie pictures. Wait for it. Poop jokes!